Good afternoon. I'm Dan Smith. I am audio director here at Willow Creek in the weekend team. So I mix front of house. Buddy down here is Josh Gonzalez. He runs monitors on the weekends. And I don't know if Yvonne's around here, but we're a three-part audio team. That was Mother's Day service a couple weekends ago. Any questions about that before I get on to topic?
Was your mom there?
No. All right. So we're going to talk a little bit about audio workflow and how we get to prepare for a service like you just saw. It's our audio process at Willow here, and go over a little bit. So my family has a tradition. In production world, you don't always have a set schedule, and things can be fluctuating. I have a wife and four boys, and it's important to have a few set things that the kids can latch on to and go, Daddy's going to be here for this. One of those is Saturday morning breakfast. So I make a huge pancake breakfast every Saturday morning. The kids have come to love it so much that Friday nights before we go to bed and pray and all that, they, Daddy, it's Saturday tomorrow. We get pancakes. Like, yeah, you do. So Saturday mornings I wake up and we try and do this as many days out of the year or as many Saturdays out of the year as possible. And because I look forward to it so much, I want to do a really good job. I'm driven. So I want to make them the absolute best pancakes they've ever had. I'm always after the search for the most fluffy, airy, delicious pancake you can find, right? But that outcome is so dependent on preparation, which is what we're going to talk about today. So for the average at-home chef that wants to make pancakes, they buy a mix, they put water in the mix, they mix it up, they throw it on the grill, and there's a pancake. I'm not average. So I've been working on my recipe for years, and there's a science to what I do. There was one weekend that I forgot something, and I got to tell you something about my son, Noah. So he's my second son. He's 7 years old now. He is the exact opposite of everything I am. He's the extrovert. He's got crazy energy. He's our only one like that so far. And when he is really excited about something, he has high expectations. If they get let down, he goes into just a blobbering mess, you know, head back, wailing, tears, the whole thing, almost immediately. It's like a light switch. Well, I was cooking breakfast last year, and one of the most important steps of the baking process for pancakes is sifting in your flour, your baking soda, all the dry ingredients, so they get well blended before you bake them. I forgot. I threw them in the bowl, mixed it up, made the pancakes. They were fluffy. They looked great. Handed them over to my kids. Have you ever tasted baking soda or baking powder? Straight up. It's metal. It dries out your mouth. It's nasty and it lasts forever. Guess who got the bite of baking powder? That was Noah. So he got one bite and you see it in his face. Eyes clenched, threw his head back, mouth wide open, screaming. His expectations weren't met because of my preparation, right? And side note, for weeks and weeks after that, he always asked me, Dad, are these the bad pancakes? Way to break your dad's heart. So what can I learn from this experience? Whoops, not two slides, just one. Preparation is the most important part of execution. It's something we don't talk about very often because it's way more fun to talk about snare compression and side chaining and, you know, all the other fun stuff we get to do. But my goal for that instance was a perfect pancake. Everything else before the goal of making that perfect pancake was preparation, and that's the part I failed. So in audio world, my goal mixing audio is an awesome, inspiring worship experience and clear spoken word that's distraction free. And in order to get there, I have to prepare, and I have to prepare well. So as I was working on this talk, I thought, okay, how much time do I actually spend in preparation? So on a weekend, we have three services here. They're about 75 minutes apiece, and I'm a 40-hour employee, right? So doing the math, I am preparing for something 90.625% of the time. So 10%, less than 10% of my time is execution. Right now, I'm not always preparing for the weekend service. We could be preparing for the next thing that's coming. We could be cleaning, organizing, testing, but that's all preparation, right? It's all just different ways to say it. So why we prepare, before we get on how we do it, my number one reason, my biggest reason, is so that I can be agile if anything new comes up. So we've all been in the situation where we've walked in the room on Sunday and the worship leader goes, I want a guitar. And you go, no. because of the way our audio term prepares, we can say, okay. And we have a quick discussion, deploy the solution, and we're up and running within minutes, right? If we hadn't prepared in a lot of the ways I'm going to talk about here, that wouldn't be possible. So another reason I prepare is self-confidence. If I have prepared completely, if I have gone through all my input lists, stage plots, line checks, console prep, everything, then I know when I push up this fader, I know exactly what it's going to do. I know how the compressors are going to act. They're in line. I know the entire chain of what's going to happen behind that, right? So I am more confident after I've prepared. Basics, we want to make sure everything's working, right? And this is another big one for us that that Josh and I specifically have been working on for a couple of years, is building confidence of the audio team and the worship team, right? If we show up every week and the worship team comes in, loads in, and they plug in stuff and it's not working, they're not going to have any confidence in our abilities to mix, let alone just get things working. So our goal always has been, we want everything that we know of is working line checks. When they plug in, we're good to go, and they can start doing what they need to do. So how do we do this? I put it, you know, a nice clickbait title, 5 ways to prepare for a great service. So here's one. Prepare for the big picture. So one big way I prepare is planning center. So our worship team plans everything out on Tuesdays, everything they know. Sometimes they don't know everything. They plan out everything they can know on Tuesday, and they put up tracks for us. I see Matt back there smiling. Sorry, it's our worship leader. Just caught his eye. So they prepare everything. And on Thursday mornings, we have our weekend team meeting, our weekend team production meeting. And that's where we go over all the details. So on Thursday mornings when I'm driving in, I've got PCL music player in my car, and I'm listening to all the tracks that they've put in there. That way at the meeting, I can ask intelligent questions and not dumb questions, right? And then I'll continue to listen to those throughout the week and get myself prepared to mix those songs. Another way to prepare for big picture is your speaker. So we have this big summit, Global Leadership Summit, every year, and there's 10 to 12 presenters that come into that, and I have to provide microphones for all of them and make sure they're happy and working. There's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes to find out what kind of mics they like, but I'd go beyond that, and I look them up on YouTube, watch as many videos as I can, find out their mannerisms, find out how loud they talk, you know, do they sweat like crazy, all the little things that could burn you, you know. People that talk like this and then shout as loud as they can, I need to have protection in place for that. Well, there's this one speaker where the team did the research and said he will wear a headset. I said, great, because we all love headsets more, right? I did my research on YouTube, and I could not find one video where he wore a headset. He always either had a handheld or a lav. So I pulled Troy aside, Troy, our technical director, before that sometime. I said, I don't think he's going to want this. We ought to be ready with this. And sure enough, came up Summit. Oh, I'm not going to wear that. I want a handheld. Okay, so we're ready. We hand you a handheld. You're good to go. Not much skin off my back. So other things we've done to prepare just for our pastors. We haven't done it here because there's teams that take care of our pastors, but places I've been, pastor comfort kits is what I call it, lozenges, mints, things like that. Take care of your speakers. PCO, as you're looking that over for the big picture, think about your transitions. What are you going to do between a song and a verbal? What are you going to do between that verbal and a video? What's happening after your pastor? What do those moves look like on your console, how you have your console set up? If I'm going to screw up a transition, where's it going to be? So I can think about that and work on it. And then another thing we're really big on here at Willow in general is having a backup plan. So part of my big picture is, what do we do if this mic goes down? If my main pastor's mic goes down, he knows because we've talked to him and the stage team knows, there's a handheld in the front row. We're going to hand it up. He's not going to ask any questions. He's going to take it and he's going to move on. Now, if we didn't have that in place, if his mic went down, how long would that take for us to find something, get the channel, patch it right, bring it over to him? The difference between a 2-minute stop and a 10-second stop in the life of what a pastor's preaching and how that's going to distract them is huge. So having a backup plan, going through that in your head, I've got a backup plan for my Waves server. If that goes down, I know what I'm going to do to fix it, because if Waves goes down, I'm going to lose vocals and a few other things. So I've got backup plans for that. They say they never go down. Number two, prepare the input list. So why are these things important? First place I worked, we didn't use input lists, and I wasn't sold on them because it was the same band every week. They always plugged into the same places. They're always the same places on the board. So the next place I worked, we really needed them. So here's the path that the audio took. So count these up. Mic into a cable, right? That's the easy one. Cable goes into a drop snake, but the drop snake has two or three bad lines in it. The drop snake goes into a 64-channel split that four of the channels aren't hooked up because they couldn't reach the right thing in the patch area. So then the split goes up to a patch bay, which also has a bunch of dead patches because it was put in 1982, and it's one of the TRS old patch things. So there's five. And then the patch bay goes to the input on the console, right? XLRs in the back of an M7. And then the console has soft patching. So I have six different ways to fail in that moment. If one of those things changes, then I'm chasing forever. So that's a really extreme example of needing an input list. But other reasons are important. So like I said, one of my number one goals is we're agile. And if I need to change something, if we need an instrument to move from stage left to stage right, I can look at that instrument and say, okay, we're going to move it from these patches to these patches. I'm going to copy gains over. We're going to plug them in and run. At that point, monitors and broadcasts have the exact same input list. They update, we all update, and we're good to go. It also really helps with troubleshooting. So if you have any issues at all, you can look at your saying instrument's not working. Why is this bass not working? Well, it's because it says I need 48 volts. I don't have 48 volts because it's an active DI, right? That's a simple solution. Whereas if you didn't have that and you weren't thinking, well, maybe I'm going to change a cable first, or I'm going to, you know, it leads you down simple paths to fix things. So what type of things go on the input list? If you're on Worship Audio Collective, you might have seen me post looking for some examples of input lists. I'm not going to show you all those today, but those will be, I'll have a link up here where you can look at all the things I gathered and some other cool stuff too. But these are all the things that I found on input lists. So obvious things like source, snake, stage box, inputs, what mic it is. So these are the different things I found. This is just the input side. I'm not going to do the output side right now. Some of them just had, you know, where does it plug into, what channel it is, and who is it? You know, whatever works for you, but these are just some things you could put on there. So here's an example of worship list, and this is pretty cool. I got this one. Jonah from Bethel was nice enough to share theirs with us. And I like a really clean, pretty spreadsheet. And that's clean and pretty. It's color-coded. Yeah, sorry. I'm a spreadsheet geek. All right. Yeah, so we have simple, so source, input device, what type of stand it's on. Stage input, I'm assuming that's a drop snake type of situation. The location, which we don't actually have on ours. And then patches for front of house monitors, broadcasts. So I'm going to walk you through ours real quick. Like I said, I'm a spreadsheet geek, so be warned. And this, there will be a copy of this in the Google Drive that I'm going to share with you as well, so you can take what you want from it. So this is our master input list section. It's got the basics of each thing. So our input card, which is actually our patch. This is our patch address that we use on the PM10s. The sub snake that is color-coded, so the snakes are actually color-coded. This, it has red on it. And then, you know, different type of red. So our inputs, the mics, whether it needs 48 volts, what stand it's on. Notes are, I think I have a note down here. Our MD mic has a OptiGate on it. So that's, you know, it's an SM58, but it also has an OptiGate. The artist, and then what monitoring device they're on. So the monitoring device, this is all intertwined here. So Josh comes in every week, and if he wants Tom to be on input A, he types in his name, and then it updates a sheet. So then what we do with this is there's an input list for front of house monitors and broadcast. I'll show you front of house since that's my world. This is where everything goes. You'll notice I have a note over here. These are front, so these are notes specific to it, but my snare, my compressed snare, which I don't use much anymore, is over on that channel, so that's why it's double patched. But if I want to put something here, say the bass guitar, there's a drop down. You select what you want, it populates, it shows you exactly where it is. So as you're programming your console, you just go down this list and pick, which works really well for us. Monitors and broadcasts do the same thing. We are not set up anything alike except for, well, Josh doesn't even have kick out, so we don't even have our kicks in the same place. So there's your mics and IEMs. We assign mics and it mic capsules and it shows up over there. This page I don't use a whole lot, but it is just my custom banks. I use it when I have big events so I can lay things out, my custom faders. And this gets into mega geekery, so we won't spend on too much of this, but this shows you our RPIOs, what's in each one. That shows you what's in the stage boxes, patch sheets, sub snakes, output patches. All this is auto-populated based on other items, Dante patches. So like I said, this will be available. Y'all can peruse through it. And then the final thing is our mic inventory, which I think the next update to this will be when you plug in a mic here, it removes it from inventory. That way I can see total inventory. But yeah, so that's our input list. And that saves us so much time and trouble. Just being able to have clear communication between the three of us and anybody else that needs it. We share it with our audio systems engineer and bigger events, our TD will get it. That way we all have it. That's another thing. Always share your input list. Don't keep it for yourself. Even if it's to the worship leader or somebody, if you don't come in and somebody needs to know something, if it's in an Excel file on your computer, there's no way they're gonna figure out what's going on. So share it with somebody, throw it in a Dropbox. So number three is preparing our stage. So some pre-work to be done is working through the layout before you set up, whoever that's supposed to be with. I had a thing that happened here. I was running another event that was in a space that normally doesn't run events. This particular pastor wanted to be up there, and I looked at the room, and it's rectangle. Right, so there's two short walls and two long walls. I'm like, well, he obviously wants a stage on the short wall because then everybody can see better, because the long wall, we'd have to get more PA. I was wrong, so I spent all that day, a few hours, because I like neat cables. I cleaned everything up pretty, got the staging in, got the drums in, got everything in, gaffed down and pretty, and then he walks in just as I was starting to tune the PA. He said, I want it on that wall. Okay. So it didn't get put back as neat as it was before, But I'm thankful for really good teams that helped me out. I called a few people and they're like, okay, moved around. So I learned a lesson that day about working with others and always asking questions first. So the way we do our stage layout is through what we call a stage plot, and we use OmniGraffle. And this is what one of our typical stage plots looks like. And this is the service that you just saw before. So everybody give a hand to Josh for making stage plots. It's his favorite job in the world. So we do stage plots for a few reasons. I think they're pretty obvious, you know. So we know where things are going to go. We pin them in the right place. We can set everything up. Once we get these set up, Josh and our video director, Darren, go out on stage and they set those lighting heads in place. We have those heads in place so lighting can focus when nobody's there. And we also have gaff on the stage. It says the person's name and on the wagons and such. So these are really important to us. This gets shared through the entire team. It's on Planning Center, and we all know that this is where this person's going to be at this time. So this was Mother's Day. So this is the Congregationals. That was the special you saw. That was cello, grand piano, and solo singer. And you also notice on these that the names have strike-throughs. Those are people that aren't playing, so are letting people know, I'm not going to light that this scene. There's a verbal there. The response song where the pastor stayed up. And then we slow jammed the announcements that day, which was really fun. And that was, he had a move where he had to go and jump on his sax. All right. So that's our stage plots. We use OmniGraffle is a name, but they've used Visio here before, PowerPoint. Planning Center actually has a stage plot thing. If you've never used it, you throw in a PDF of your stage and you can drag people around. That's an easy one if you've already got Planning Center. So the next item on the preparing our stage, I didn't know where to put this one because it kind of encompasses everything, but we use a checklist here. If you don't use checklists, I would highly advise you to start using checklists. There's a great book called The Checklist Manifesto by Atul Gawande, and that'll be in the link at the end, so don't worry about writing it down now. And it's all about the importance of these checklists in our preparation, right? So we have 22 points on our checklist, and that's what it is right now. It changes every time we forget something, right? So you'll notice the one top left, gaff tape all power connections. Fortunately, this is at a rehearsal. We use a twist lock, 30 amp. And it was at a rehearsal. We still don't know how it happened. The cable's just laying there, and all of a sudden the keys wagon lost power. So found out it just went like this. So now we gaff tape all the twist locks. And that has solved that issue. So but some of these are, some of them are things that are obvious. Other ones are, we've had an issue before, so we throw them up there and we test them. Another part of stage preparation for me, who tunes your drums? Do any of you guys in here tune drums? Do them yourselves? Yeah, I do too. So last job I had, nobody tuned the drums, so I just learned via YouTube and experimentation, and that's come through here. But that's a big part of my Friday workflow, personally, because if we can get the toms to sound exactly the same, I use a tune bot, sound exactly the same, replace the heads every 1 to 2 months, just helps out in the stage preparation. And then the drummer can walk in and doesn't have to worry about it. And yeah. And then walk pads is the other thing. Just be aware when you're laying stuff down, laying it around, that you got your gaff tape out. And know where people are going to be walking so you don't become the cause of a trip and fall. Preparing the console is the next piece of this. We, as an audio team, usually, so Thursdays, we get everything, get all the input lists done, and we'll usually program Thursday or Friday morning. We all go to our consoles and spend 30, 40 minutes programming, checking everything we need to check. and then doing a line check after that. But part of this preparing your console is really understanding your console layout. I have had the same console layout for 13 years. So, and the reason I do that is because I'm fast on it. So I started with this guy, Yamaha GA32. And you'll notice there's a bank on the left, there's a bank on the right, and then there's a bunch of group faders in the center. And that's how I ran. The band was over there, vocals were on the right, and the speech stuff was on the far right. And that's just how we ran for a lot of years. Well, then we upgraded this guy. And he's got DCAs in the center. Band's on the left, vocals are on the right. And then I moved over to this guy, and this has got basically the same thing. So what I'm saying is knowing your console layout and being able to be quick on it is whatever works for you. Don't do it my way. I am going to include all my console files in that folder. So the PM10 CL5, I've got front of house end monitors for the CL5. And you can see what I'm doing, but don't change anything because of me. But yeah, and then we move to this guy, which you'd think that the right side looks like DCA, but you'd be wrong. It's really the center section. And then there's, no, the other guys run DCAs on the right. So, but it's just my console layout. I know that when I push this button, I'm gonna get to this input. When I push this button, I'm gonna get to this input. I'm very fast at that point. So then after preparing the console, it's a line check. We always do a full line check, every single analog input, every single handheld, every single wireless, IEMs. We'll walk the belt packs once in a while just to make sure we're not getting any interference. But full line check every single week, because we've had times where we haven't touched a thing and things have still broken. It's amazing how that works. And then our sound check. So who all here has a dedicated, like, in planning center sound check time? Yeah, there's a few of you, so there's probably gonna be less for this question. How many of you have in planning center a dedicated load-in time? Much less. I can't stress enough how important it is to have both those times in your plan. They do a lot of things. So at MixU, Lee, I'm probably gonna butcher this, so I'm gonna try it. Lee talks about when your sound check becomes your line check, then your rehearsal becomes your sound check, and your run through becomes your rehearsal, and your service becomes your run through, right? Everything backs up. So if you can have these dedicated times of load in, dedicated times of sound check, and you can actually do those things when they're supposed to be done, then the rest of your day goes so much smoother. So we do a band load in, they have a call time, and then they have, I think, 10 minutes to load in. During that load in time, I'm never at the booth. That's my time to walk up, shake everybody's hand, see how they're doing, see how their kids are doing. A lot of times with the worship leader and music director, I'll go up, what can I do for you today? What's going on, anything new? It's a point of connection before you get back at the soundboard and have to talk through them through a microphone into their ears going, hey, I need this, right? So it lets them know that you're not ticked. You can look them at the eye and smile. Look them in the eye and smile, and it helps with the relationship building part. So part of our load-in process, they all plug in, and they're all supposed to check their ears, check their instrument, check their mic, make sure everything's working. So when we get to sound check, it's not a dead note, right? And then we have to scramble and find. Now, sometimes that does happen. We're not perfect at this. We're still working on this piece. But during load in, we want to hear click. We want to hear everything coming Dante. We want to make sure it's all working. So that's part of load in. And then for the actual sound check, where's a good place to start? We've tried a lot of different things. For us, usually it starts by our MD saying, hey, can everybody hear me, right? So he talks into the mic, confirms that everybody's packs are working. We've been burned by that too, where we started and there's a person with their ears out. So it's a good place to start, making sure everybody can hear. We have a couple of rules in our sound check. There's any time, any person that's front of house, monitors, audio engineer, music director, worship leader can stop the sound check. Call a pause point, we're gonna fix something. Last week I did that. We don't do it very often. We're right in the middle of checking one of the vocalists. Said, guys, we got to stop. This mic was super hissy, lots of extra noise, and it was a good 5 minutes to fix that. But because we fixed it in sound check, I'm not dealing with hiss and noise in line check and in the rehearsal, right? So sound check is the time to fix your stuff. If there's something you don't like, get after it. If the electric guitar doesn't sound right, go check your mic. Sound check's the time to fix it, because once we get into our rehearsal, if we need to change something, that changes ears, that changes front of house, that could change gain, it stops rehearsal, it stops flow. So I would rather, and I think most of the band would rather, extend sound check than pause a rehearsal, right? So if we get a little behind, I'd rather get behind in sound check. And if something sounds off, like I said, talk to them about it. But a lot of times, the conversations I've had, they have no idea that what they're sending me wasn't good, you know, or less than optimal. And just a conversation helped that. The main drummer and I are working through snare tones right now, trying to figure out exactly what he likes, exactly what I like, and trying to land on a solution. So during sound check, a big piece is gain structure. Who was not in Robert's class? I'm sorry you missed. It was amazing. So I'm not going to touch a whole lot on gain structures. He did a great job. Go back and listen when they have these things for sale. You'll thank yourself. It's amazing. But gain structure, our rule is we set our Yamaha desk between minus 18 and minus 12 average. We want to see peaks of the high transients of the drums about minus 6, minus 4. And then vocals, during sound check, we usually set them slightly lower than we know they're going to be in service. Because I can't count. No, that's not a good way to say it. The vocalist will always sing louder during a service because there's more energy in the room. They have more energy. I'll never blame a vocalist for doing that. As much as I've asked them, sing out as hard as you can, they never will. It's just there's not enough energy to do that at that point, and they're not warmed up enough. So we always build in a little bit of fluff for that. Said this before, but I put it in here three times, so I'm going to say it three times. Ask for changes now in sound check. It's the best time to get it. One thing we like to do in sound check is after everybody's checked, they play something. It doesn't have to be something from the set. Everybody together. Make sure that the changes you made are actually good before we get into rehearsal and have to stop and go, oh, I need this out of my ears. I need more of me, less of me, whatever. And then something new we've started, our worship leader, James, has started right after sound check doing an impromptu worship moment where we can all center before we start a rehearsal process. And that's been really good for me, because after you get out of a sound check process, your brain's kind of, all right, I'm working hard, I'm dialing. And then we get into this worship moment where I can sit back and go, okay, let's do this artistically. And it's not as pressurized as doing a rehearsal. So that's been really good for our entire team, I think. Did you say that, Josh? Yeah. All right, so that was number five, and we haven't even talked about rehearsal. So my point in this is that we aren't preparing for the service. We're preparing for rehearsal. Now, rehearsal is part of preparation, right? You are practicing, you are preparing. But all this stuff I've talked about leads up to a great rehearsal. So when I sit down at rehearsal and the band starts playing, I can mix artistically. I don't have to worry about things breaking and things not being in the right place. I can get my artistic sculpt on the snare drum, and you know, we can do all these things that we might not be able to if we were running behind. So I've noticed when we do all these things, you feel more comfortable, you feel more relaxed. I can listen more objectively. I don't have to. I don't have to be listening for problems. I can listen for the good stuff and bring it out. I'm able to freely work on my mix. So I'll go through our rehearsal process real quick. It's not super impressive. We have, our musicians are expected to know the music, the chord changes, transitions, all that before they even hit the stage. They don't rehearse as a team. They communicate well through Planning Center, and they're all pretty stellar musicians. So they, when they come to the stage, they know what they're doing. So our rehearsal is between 20 and 30 minutes, and they do all their songs in that time. They run them through once, and basically rehearsals for production. And so the cameras can know what they're gonna do. It's a production rehearsal. And then we'll have a little bit longer rehearsal for our specials package, which is usually, it's a video plus a song, or a spoken word plus a song, or some special element. And that's a little longer, but that's because production's working all the transitions and prettying that up. So we call it rehearsal, but it's really rehearsal for production. It's not really rehearsal for the band, although they do work on things and they're constantly improving during that time too. All right, that's what I have for you. That's the screen you want to take a picture of. It's going to have some fun stuff in it for you. Side note, how many here have stereo rooms? You know, left or right. There's an article in here called The Emperor's New Mix. I would encourage you to read that. It's a great mix, or a great article on how to mix a stereo room. It's changed my view dramatically. So are there any questions, comments? Yeah? What point do we start on Sunday? Yeah, so our first service is at 9. I'm there at 7:45. I usually do a short virtual sound check. Band's call time is 8. We usually run one song in the special package, which will usually take us to 8:15, and then we break and 9 o'clock's first service. So we have about a half hour that we're working in the morning. Yeah? Nope. Oh, virtual sound checks? Yeah, I do. Yeah, we all do. Yeah, we all do virtual sound checks. Usually Friday is when we're playing with that. Yeah. Yeah.
You guys do a full run through all the songs.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's a big piece I missed. So, yeah, we do a full run through. It is everything, every microphone that's going to be used. It might not be the actual speaker, but we'll start from the beginning. The band will give the welcome, go right through. Any microphones being used, we actually have a stage team member walk up with the actual microphone, talk into it so I can do the muscle memory thing of practicing the transitions, getting the right mic up at the right time. Yeah, good question. Yeah. To get all your work done in 35 hours max? This process is a great way, honestly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I'm not in your situation, but the more processes and, you know, checklists and things you can implement to make you think about what's important and what needs to get done and the order it needs to get done, I'm sure you could fit it all in. I was the last job I was technical director for a massive campus with a school, and I had one part-time guy, and we had services all over the place, and so I feel what you're going through, but it can be fit, it can be done, just really good processes. Yeah.
When you're doing your inputs on stage, like depending on what's going on, are you running wired sub snakes, drop snakes?
Yeah. The question is how we're doing our wiring on stage. So we do use drop snakes. There are 16x4 drop snakes. We've got on either side of our stage. We've got access to 3 each, so we could from the side stages bring out 16x4 drop snakes out onto the stage, and that's how we do all our wiring. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you say a little more about your Saturday run-through?
Saturday run-through. So we get done with rehearsal, and there's usually a break time, and that's when it's actually the run-through is a dress. So the band, vocalist, everybody goes and gets what they're going to wear for the service. We do the same, yeah, because I'm usually mixing in PJs until that point. Josh too. So when we start the run through, we do a normal. I run Spotify, so we're running music pre. Broadcast is ready. They're running music. Josh is checking mics, making sure everything's working. We do a full countdown every time. We do countdown from 10, get things going. The band runs every song, every transition, everything they're going to do, all the verbals. So if he's going to pray, he prays. He usually prays for the service. You know, it's not exactly what he's going to do in the service. And then the transition. So if one of our pastors is going to come up and speak, they will. One of the stage team members will take their mic, whether it's a head worn or a handheld, and walk up in the place they're going to speak. So we have lights and everything. I'll bring up the mic. Cameras will take the shot, and we'll do that. And then whatever transitions out of that, if it's a video, it's a countdown into video, and then video, you know, it's every single transition. That's the biggest thing. We don't want to become a distraction in these transition moments, which are so easy to become distractions in by a missed mic cue or levels too loud, levels too soft. It's all about muscle memory. So we don't do the pastor's message, but we do have somebody walk up with a pastor's mic and check it. So, yeah, full run through. Any other questions? Yeah.
Maybe this is a question for the leadership session. I'm curious, do you have a trusted second so you can take vacation? Are you here?
Yeah. I'm not here 52 weeks a year, thankfully. We have a list of contractors that we pull from, guys that have mixed here before. In fact, one of the guys that did my job before me is on that contractor list. And yeah, so I'll have 4 to 5 weekends off a year. Not 45, 4 to 5. Yeah.
But it's not a volunteer.
No, it's not a volunteer. We contract in. Yep. Yeah. Biggest challenge mixing in my environment. The speed that you have to pull a mix together and make it sound amazing. So you at that point, you lean in a lot to the talent of everybody around you, and you're like, I just need to throw up faders. I need it to sound amazing. You know, my pre-work's good. So yeah, that's my hardest thing, is how quick we have to get moving. Yeah.
I assume you have an A2 next to you?
Nope, I don't have an A2. No, I don't. The technical director sits next to me, and he gives me all the direction, you know, for what we're doing. I've got a comm that I can call Josh, Yvonne, or the stage team with. We do have, usually there's a dedicated stage team member listening to audio, so if we need a hand, we can call them for help. So, yeah.
So why contract and not have a volunteer?
That's a, it's a leadership decision. Yeah, to they're asking why not a volunteer, why we're on contract. It's leadership decision based off of values of wanting to have consistency. And yeah. I don't have a really, really good answer for that because I wasn't in that process. I've only been here 2 years. So, yeah. Any other questions? Nope, no, there's no A2 anywhere. Sometimes for big events, we'll have an A2. So Summit, we usually have an A2. We had a wireless guru last year for Summit that basically stood and looked at the spectrum analyzer all day to make sure nothing was going on with all this wireless craziness we have. We've got a big musical coming up that our special friends ministry does. We'll have A2s and other help for that. So it depends on the service. But typically we don't. Way back there. Yeah. I really don't want you to contact me. Thanks. Good question. I can answer that one. What else?
For RF, do you guys rescan regularly, or do you just kind of leave it on
for that? RF, do we rescan regularly? We've got one of the Axient, whatever it is, ATX 600 that continually scans. So Matt's got a mega file in his office with continuous scans that he checks regularly. We're always on the lookout for when the next thing's going to pop up. T-Mobile's lit up all around us, but they haven't said South Barrington yet. So we're just kind of waiting for that day to come. Yeah? It's either a scene or really fast hand movements. So depending on the weekend, like a lot of times it's just the only thing I run in waves is vocals, verbs, and my snare. So I can get the vocal chain off real quick and pop them off by hand, but I've also created scenes where I've had more complicated things that I'll turn waves off. Yeah. I start fresh. Yep. And I do run scenes and I do recall DCAs and I recall vocal assignments and I do a lot of recalling, just not EQs and comps and things like that. Any other questions?
You guys run like a Reaper file and then play it back?
It's not Reaper, it's Nuendo. But yeah, it's a DAW that just records. The PM10s, you can take 128 channels direct out of, and that goes into my virtual sound check, which records, and then push a button, it goes into virtual sound check. Yeah. Anything else?
Why did you go from the SXL
to the PM10? I moved jobs. He asked, why did I move from the SXL to the PM10? I actually went from, I didn't include it on there, but I went from the SXL to the PM1D to the PM10. So yeah, the SXL was at my last job. I was on the beta team for that that system, so yeah. They had a PM1D for 6 months. So when I was originally interviewing, they were telling me, yeah, we're getting PM10s, and so, yeah.
How do you work with, I noticed yesterday in the tour, there's like the master control room downstairs. How does your relationship work with them down there?
What's my relationship with master control downstairs? I don't talk to him a whole lot. Matt Wentz, who is our audio systems engineer, who's somebody you all need to know. He's on Twitter posting great stuff all the time. He has a really close relationship with Josh, Yvonne, and myself, and anything we need, we're talking to him about. But as far as the rest of master control, they're looking at things we honestly doesn't affect us. So, but all the RF repairs, all that stuff, Matt handles down there. So I have a button on my comm that's EOC, which is engineer on call. Push that button, talk to him. I can get him at any time. Yeah.
Do you have a radio system communicated to like monitor mix,
Oh, how do I talk to the other audio stations? Through comm. So we have multiple comm channels. There's an audio party line that I can push into, and I have a handset right next to me that I can pick up and talk into. Comm is fed into his ears. It's another bus, but it feeds in on top of the QPAC. So he always hears comm. He always hears me, whether he wants to or not. And I've got a, which is true, I've got a speaker next to me that I turn up that I can listen to comm and like the music director and anybody else I want to turn up in that. Com system is ClearCom Helix, maybe? Yeah, it's ClearCom. I know that. I know the little wireless packs are free speaks. So I've been a technical director for 2 years, and it's amazing how quick you lose some of the stuff that you... Yeah. Now I just think audio. Any other questions? Cool. Thanks for coming. Appreciate y'all.